to which I take little or no credit because I had a good counterpart. I supported him. I worked with him. I got weapons and equipment and spent a lot of time with these guys. But I couldn't have done it without my counterpart's interest.
Yeah, the one thing that everybody agrees on, if you had a good counterpart, you could get something done. If you had
a
lousy counterpart, you might as well not be there.
Yeah, really, that was true.
Yeah.
And this guy was good, and I think he probably paid for it with his life.
Yeah, well, that's why a lot of people weren't good. They were looking to the...
Yeah, other things. These two ladies were picked up. They had these weapons and equipment, and what we did, as I recall, was we turned them around.
Okay.
The same with this girl here. She'd been picked up. I mean, they weren't assassinated. They were captured and then turned around, and she led these guys to these weapons and supplies. Grenades. Looks like a red stripe rifle there.
He looks like a national policeman
this
there.
This is a national policeman at, this is 2EN team. And we tried to get each of the district police to dedicate a couple of people to the team. And usually when the teams ran enough, they would run as a larger group, but occasionally these local teams, you know, six or eight people would go out. And this guy was sharp. He was a national policeman, but he was gung-ho. He was Tuian. It's the district north of Tuiwa.
Okay.
Songkhau. And, you know, often in these districts, you couldn't get shit out of them. Songkhau was nothing. It was a landing strip.
Yeah. So what was the special branch presence in the district?
It depended where you were. Obviously, we had a pretty large representation in Tuiwa, which was the capital city.
Yeah.
But there was a special branch arm in Husan here, Tuian, Songkhau, Dongshun, and Sonhua. Very small in Sonhua. Very small in Dongshun.
Were they located in the Dayak, or did they have a separate facility?
They had
facility?
Their own facility, but as I recall, depending on where you were, the Dayak could be very close, even in the same building.
Okay.
Really depended on the district. There was no uniformity.
But they also had a guy in the Dayak.
Yes, usually they did.
Okay. I understood that the Dayak guy who staffed the situation section was a special branch guy.
Yeah, I usually did. I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
I just don't recall. Sanhua, you know, for the whole time I was there, nobody ever drove from Tuiwa to Sanhua. It was the only way to get into Sanhua was by the air.
Okay.
Dongshun, I drove into a couple of times, but during periods of activity, you couldn't get in. These were large districts with lots of wild country, lots of these things.
Okay.
And, you know, during the period I was in Tuiwa, it was hard to drive south. You could drive north, but a lot of times you're isolated there.
Okay.
Here, we have one. This was the operation in December of 71. So this stuff is sort of jumping around here.
Yep.
And this was the Our Sifu. Laid an ambush to stop the movement of cadres of Hua Thong.
And it's basically a province team which could go into a district, and then it would hook up with the district people who would be specialists of what was going on in that area.
Yep.
Okay.
And occasionally the district teams would go do their own thing.
Okay.
Too. I mean, this the Sifu of Sanhua District. See, Tuian and Sanhua had them in Dongshun. Here's some of the things that they did. And this is, again, Chief Nam writing the letter, trying to get some, get some feedback from the special SPB, Natrang. Secret agent of this network. Gave the information, so the Sifu went out and laid an ambush at these coordinates, killed two communists, captured one communist, seized an AK-47, one Mauser, one mine. Here, a rallier took them out to Sok Mau at this coordinate. Two VC were wounded. One, so we seized a carbine, clipped five grenades, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is the standard sort of weapons that you would find with a VC, not with the main forces.
Right, I was saying.
Red stock rifles, this sort of stuff. They got a bunch of stuff. 2EN, now that is what you see here.
Yeah.
That's the rallier there. She was a Voti Huangfan. She took them out, showed them where the stuff was, and they went out and they got it. There was somebody there when they got there, so they had a little firefight.
Yeah.
And so that's what you have. And here she is again with the flag and the rice. They seized the rice. Parachute material was frequently used to by the VC for
this
various things.
Just somebody representing every branch of the...
I know.
Yeah, every Vietnamese agency.
One of the problems she had was getting equipment.
Yeah.
That was uniform. And, you know, these guys, it didn't matter. They're all part of the same group in spite of the somewhat of the difference. But you're right, I couldn't tell you exactly how many of these were on the team and how many were not. But we'd scrounge, and what we did was scrounge.
Were you the paramilitary instructor for these people? Were you the one who, you know, gave them some rifle training and got some ammo for them to practice with?
I did the basic training. And I provided the sort of the philosophy of the unit, sort of the Oriental style. Good men, good spirit, good training, good intelligence, good results. The five goods.
Yeah.
The four don'ts. Don't need aircraft.
Yeah.
Don't need artillery.
Yeah.
Don't need Arvin.
Okay.
Don't need complex equipment. And one of the things was radios. They really wanted radios. But we basically would run the ops silent.
Yeah.
And the worst thing is a Vietnamese with a radio, because they talk all the time. I provided a big vehicle for them to drive around in. We got from the airbase an excess panel truck that we modified for use.
What were these things?
Well, that's part of the story here.
Okay.
We had nobody killed or wounded, and we killed, wounded, and captured 27.
And these were not fed in as Phoenix results.
No.
Phoenix could not claim Phoenix. Anything.
This was all special police.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
couldn't claim
special
these
police.
Numbers.
No.
Okay.
Here's what we captured. And we lost no equipment. You know, I believe, go out with Arvin, you know, everyone runs.
That's right.
Run, die, we run! Yeah. They'll run away. They drop everything.
Drop everything,
run.
Yeah.
And here's some of the stuff we picked up. And here's the type of the special team that we had, the eight-man teams. This is what we gave
okay.
them.
Eight-man teams.
Okay. One team per district.
Okay.
Two teams at province. Total of 64 men.
Okay.
And sometimes the teams would batch up.
Yeah.
As I said, sometimes two province teams would go out and join a district team, or one province and a district. Two province teams together, this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Four field force and four, okay. I see. Very interesting.
Here's the operational schedule. I noticed that we did touch base with the province and district chief before we went.
Yeah.
But the developing of the information would involve Phong Wong.
Okay.
Again,
okay.
You have to do it in a certain way. It generally, the information that would come from our own sources.
Okay.
And then we would try, when you develop it, we would try to, you know, touch base in as secure a way as possible with those elements with that would provide us with what we felt we needed before we could proceed.
Yeah.
But it was supposed to be a very quick response. The biggest problem you had in Vietnam was running anything quickly.
Okay.
You could only do it with your own assets, really. That's one of the reasons for this. For us to get the crew wrapped into one of our ops responding to our information would take 3 or 4 days. For us to get the Vietnamese to do it would take weeks.
Okay.
All the paperwork.
Yeah.
That was just, you know, this was a way to cut through the bullshit.
Okay.
To get hot intelligence and to move on it quickly. Okay. When I left, they presented me with one of the rifles that they captured. It was a red stock rifle, I believe. But okay, let's move to a different book here. Where did I have all of my...
Let me keep this one apart just
for
one page.
Yeah, I'll put it up on there,
Are you sitting on a stool in here? No. Oh, yeah.
I was, putting some books on the shelf, sorry. Yeah. So sorry.
No place to sit.
All right, this was interesting. This bridge is the longest bridge in South Vietnam, and it was just south of where we were located. It's this bridge here.
Okay.
The railroad bridge, you see, actually goes from this point to this point, even though it's crossing an island.
Okay.
During flood periods, the water just comes down through here. So the bridge, it's a long railroad bridge, and then the South Vietnamese built this highway bridge next to the railroad bridge. Well, it was a constant target for the VC, and this is the Dong Rang Bridge. It's over the Dong Rang River. And this new bridge, the new highway bridge, was completed by South Vietnam, and we knew, it was just within a matter of time. Oh, I don't know, some bigwigs came up and they dedicated it, and this was a sign of progress, and we just knew that they were going to get hit, and it did get hit.
Yeah.
And you'll notice this squad car here. What they did was kind of funny. They put the first charge on the railroad bridge across from the main bridge, and then they blew that without much damage. Some ties and so on and so forth were disrupted. So the armed guards on the road bridge, of course, drove out in their armored vehicle to see what it was, at which point they popped the other charges and dropped the bridge with the armored car into the river.
Okay. Good planning on their part.
Pretty good op. Yeah. And, this shows they're working on the railroad. I think they probably intended to drop the railroad bridge too, but it didn't quite work.
Yeah.
So that's what these are, apropos of nothing. They just happen to be in the book. This was a military op that ran in the province.
Did you work with special forces at all?
No, we had no special forces in the province. This period of time, in the spring of 72, I mentioned all of the all of the activity that was going on. There were a whole series of offensive activities in 72, and we were pretty well cut off from the rest of the region. The roads were all closed. There was a big problem with refugees. And I've got some photos of the refugees in here. But we were pretty much cut off, and we took resupply across the beaches. It had to come in from Nha Trang across the beachhead. This boat was designed to cover the landing craft. And you couldn't go north to Binh Dinh, you couldn't go south to Nha Trang. And so this was the delivery of weapons and equipment. Mm-hmm. This is interesting here because there's the big mountain. And this storage depot is down near the Army Advisory Camp, which is right down in here. So our house, our building would be up here about a couple hundred yards.
Okay.
I just kind of walked across to watch them do this stuff and took the guys' pictures. And, it's mostly ammunition, barbed wire, and stuff like that coming in. In any event, it was that spring that our team killed the cadre who was in charge of the attack on Tuy Hoa.
Okay.
And I can't find any documentation on it. I don't think I have letters that refer to it. And part of the problem was that this developed later in 72, and then I left.
Okay.
I just went home. My tour was up.
Somebody replaced you?
And I never met my replacement.
Okay.
He came in after I'd gone. But in any event, what happened, which was quite interesting, was in capturing this guy, we captured the outline of the battle plan that was going to be used. And what they planned to do was bring their forces into the city in Lambros.
Okay.
Rob, excuse me, but did you put Baker in the car?
It was raining.
Oh, that's
he was in the car, and I put the doors on the car, so you can let him out of the car.
Oh, he was already in the car
before
he
was already in the car.
Because Elaine wondered what had happened.
No, that's what it happened. Tui was, you know, was the biggest target in the province.
Mm-hmm.
During the offensive in 72, my recollection is that Dong Xuan and Son Hua were pretty much overrun. They came into Tuyan and shot the place up, but then they were driven out. But the objective was to overrun
mm-hmm.
the whole province. They overran most of Bin Din, and they even came into Quinyan City.
Yeah.
Bin Din basically fell. The idea was to do the same in Fujian. Traditionally, the highlands have been the area where the enemy has felt that it can divide the country.
Okay.
All right, I mean, this goes back to the French days.
Yeah.
And so that was the plan, I think, in 72, was to try to overrun Kantun, Pleiku, Bin Din, Fubon was VC anyway, and just come all the way to the sea.
Yeah.
They wanted to capture Tuihua City. But because of the logistics, it's a little hard. You're surrounded by water on one side, the river on this side, this river coming out here. And security is set up. This bridge and so on forms a natural barrier. So the way to get in is from the north.
Yeah.
But security is set up in such a way that you had checkpoints along the road. But every morning at 6 o'clock, the farmers would come into the market, which is right here, with their produce.
Yeah.
And they would come in Lambros.
Okay.
And so every morning, you know, first light, you'd have a long line of Lambros lining up. It was perfectly normal, perfectly natural, nothing unusual about it.
Mm-hmm.
Lining up, they'd open the, they'd pull the wire off the road, and in they would come.
And that's what we see here, these things.
Well, here's what happened.
Okay.
The documents we captured laid out this plan of attack, that they were going to infiltrate a large number of VC into the city disguised as civilians. The weapons and equipment would be placed under the seats
mm-hmm.
of the Lambros. The Lambros would be driven by recruited Viet Cong infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
The people in the vehicles, there would include a few women, but mostly it would be VC disguised as farmers and this sort of thing. And the idea was that they would bring them down into the checkpoint and then the first few vehicles would be clean and free, and once they opened the gates, in they would come.
Yeah.
And they would come into the center, and then they would attack the governmental offices and seize the city as sort of a, you know, as a fifth column almost.
Mm-hmm.
And that would create such panic that everyone else would take off. And that's really what you had. We had terrible numbers of refugees and so on the highways during that period of time.
So in other words, a TEP 68 all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we captured this information and we identified this network of mm-hmm. Lambro drivers, we went out, and here's some of the pictures of these guys. We went out and rolled them up.
Prior to the whole thing.
Prior to the thing kicking off. And it was the biggest, as I recall, from talking to people from the Trang and Saigon, it was the biggest roll-up of an infrastructural unit
mm-hmm.
to date.
So, in other words, what you have there, what are in the picture, are the Lambros they were going to use.
Yes.
Which are confiscated vehicles.
These people were arrested and these vehicles were confiscated. And the question is, what are we going to do with all these fucking Lambros?
So you put them in the pit.
We put them in the pit. Because we didn't want them to be stolen or vandalized.
Yeah.
You know, we were afraid to store them outside, so we brought them all in. We arrested the guys, we seized the Lambros, we brought them all into the pit.
How many employees did you have in the pick? Do you recall?
I don't recall. 15, 20. I don't really recall. It wasn't that many.
Do you recall if they were all special branch people?
I don't know. It makes sense that they were, but I don't know for sure. You know, you never knew. I mean, in a war like that, you get some guy who's military, who's assigned to do liaison, and the next thing you know, he's in the pick because his brother-in-law is somebody or other, and you know.
Is that a lookout point?
Yeah, that lookout point is for the police compound, as I mentioned.
Oh, that's across the way.
Yeah,
okay.
If not across the way, as I recall, these photos are taken with my back to the green door, which was behind me, which would mean that you would go out and around, and my office would be on the other side of the pick, over in this area, and lookout was for the police station generally, which was downtown. It was located on a large compound, and you know, you could close the pick off from the police station. There were areas where you could pull the barbed wire in and that sort of thing.
Were there guards for the pick?
Yeah.
Did they, you know, like have, isn't there on each corner of the pick a post?
There was, most of the picks had the same kind of, you see, here's another tower here. These towers are all outside the pick. And my recollection was that they were for security generally for the whole compound. But certainly they could have been security for the pick too. I mean, they were within line of sight, but...
Okay.
I wish I had a better picture. You know, you spend two years living someplace, and you just don't have a lot of time for pictures, and you know, you end up taking a bunch of them for some reason.
What was the general occupancy of prisoners or detainees?
Well, we were pretty loaded at that point, and there was a province-level jail.
Yeah.
So, you
which
know...
Which is the National Police Advisor.
Yeah,
him,
you have that jail. So, you know, we interrogated all these Lambro drivers, but a lot of them didn't know anything other than that, you know, well, I was recruited and I was told to do this, and I was threatened, and they were gonna kill me or take my wife, and you know, most of them were just a bunch of poor guys that had been caught in the war. Some of them were perhaps a little more hardcore than others,
Were there 25 cells in the pick? Is that about it? More?
I don't recall. That sounds like a reasonable number, but I couldn't tell you how many there were.
Okay.
And, you know, as I recall, there were 6 or 8 interrogation rooms.
Okay.
There were certain offices for the head of the pick itself, and then the rest were the cells. And some of the cells were isolation cells, and others... for the women, for example, they were separated away a little bit. They were, you know, the isolation cells you accessed from an exterior door. Some of the other cells you accessed from inside. I think these were some of the isolation cells here, maybe.
I don't get you exactly, although
and this here was an interior cell area, as I recall. See, as I recall, the interrogation rooms were located along here. And maybe a few there, and then
that would have been on the right side as you came in.
The right side as you came in, and then there were certain areas where these doors are so close together, where you'd actually that would be a cell, but it would be a cell with floor-to-ceiling concrete and with a window and ventilation, but the guy couldn't talk to anybody else.
Okay, and that's an isolation cell.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas on this side. Behind here, where the shutters are, as I recall, you walk in and you walk down a corridor where there are cells, one next to another, where you may have 2 people together, 3 people together. You know, it was not isolation.
Okay. So that's what you say. This is exterior access. This would be
interior.
On the left. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
See what I mean?
Okay.
But the guy who built them, that's...
So, in other words, it would almost go from a... less important prisoner to a more important prisoner to the interrogation cell where he's being worked on, and that kind of a progression.
It might go, you pick the guy up, you put him in here. You talk to him, he's cooperative, he begins to cooperate, he's, works out fine. So maybe you move him, maybe he's going to stay here for a while. Maybe you move him, if he requests it, to a bigger room.
I gotcha. Okay.
Anyone who was injured... as I recall, we would not put in the isolation cells. We would put them over here because the air was better. It was a nicer place to be.
Okay. May I keep this one?
Yeah.
This would
well,
give me such
you.
A...
Let me tell you which one I'll give you to keep, if you don't mind. Is because that...
Because I can make a copy, too, of anything that give you and return your original.
That has a guy in it. I'll give you these. That's a duplicate. I'll give you this one.
Okay.
And that one.
Yep, that shows the doors and the window.
This one here.
Okay, great.
Right?
Yep.
And I don't know how much that's going to help you, but, you know...
It's a lot easier than trying to remember.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you leave a place 2 days later, you can't remember. I'll leave this room and I won't remember that
sure.
there's a bookcase right there.
Yeah.
You know,
well, you can have those and, you know, they're non-attributable, I
okay.
think. And it doesn't... It's not... It doesn't show you as much as if, you know, you could get
a
jury.
They look a lot like the Nha Trang Pick, except the Nha Trang Pick had a lot of trees and a nice little courtyard and stuff like that. Did you ever get down to the Nha Trang Pick, to the regional office?
I don't recall, you know, I'm sure I did at some point. I don't really recall that at all. See, I think the prison, the jail was... here's the Long Bridge. The Tui Wa Air Base was down there. And
we're looking south.
We're looking south.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the Tui Wa Airstrip, which was a PCP airstrip. Here's Route 1 heading north.
I gotcha.
Okay. And the city is sort of over here.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, the jail was someplace out, like right around in here or something.
Okay.
And then the police station with the... pick and everything else is somewhere over in here.
Okay.
That looks like a church there, so that can't be it. It was somewhere, it was in the city. I can't see it exactly off of this photograph. It's, okay, and this is looking north and south. Here again, here's that airstrip right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the problem you have here. I mean, look what you do. You suddenly you're out in rice paddies, and it's rice paddies all the way out. So to bring a lot of folks in, obviously the defensive networks are set up along this sort of dry area. To be able to bring a lot of folks down Route 1 into the city, that was a brilliant idea. To try to do it out along here would be a little more, or along this road here, a little more difficult. It's open territory, and you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we had observation posts up here, and there was a road going up there. The guys.
Radio relay or something?
Yeah, it was some sort of special signaling business.
Yeah.
Guys that lived up there lived in a world of their own.
Yeah,
they'd
sure.
come to Vietnam, they'd fly them in, they'd sit up there for weeks. I drove up twice.
Yeah.
And then they got blown away coming down one afternoon. They were coming down to have some party in the village, and the Jeep load of people was blown up and disintegrated, and so from that point on they would live up there and nobody would
and monitored radio traffic in the valley and stuff below.
Stuff
okay.
like that. Here again you can see the Tui Wa Air Base area, and there were upwards of 10,000 people there at the height of the war, and when I arrived they were closing it out. It was Americans.
Yeah.
And again I don't see, this looks out, this looks east out to where we were, and you've got sort of the military compound here, and then you got the Japanese freighter.
Okay.
And here's flying into Song Khao, I guess, with the Porter aircraft. This is the Russian ship caper. We received an intelligence report from a hitherto good source saying a Russian ship had come in, had offshore, and had offloaded some stuff into some fishing boats, which had gone to this island, which is off from Nui Hanba, and had left the stuff there. And so this is the G2 major who got me involved with going out with him to take a look. And he went with some, these are some military types here. We didn't find anything. We intercepted some fishing boats. I don't know shit about it. These are Koreans. This is Korean outpost here.
What were they doing?
They were in regular patrols. You know, military stuff. They were into the black market like nobody's business. The Koreans.
That's what everybody said.
Yeah, I
Did you know a guy named Earl Smith or a guy named Pat Daly?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Was Smith the guy who replaces Morales?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Pat Daly was the number two. I knew Pat pretty well.
Okay.
Did you talk with him at all, or?
No, I would like to, but I haven't had
any
luck tracking them down. But I knew that, I heard that Smith had replaced Morales as
Morales was a jerk. He's tried to fuck everything that moved. He was a jerk. Yeah. He didn't have any business being here. Smith left in disgrace. He ended up screwing somebody's wife. Smith's counterpart, some general or somebody, was killed, and so he wanted to, you know, take care of his wife. In other words, you know, your husband's dead, this great tragedy. He ended up sleeping with her. Oh, and there was all kinds of dirty stuff. There was a misappropriation of funds, and he used agency funds to buy the house, and he said, we'll use it as a safe house. The whole thing was a mess.
So then you knew Daly, too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Pat Daly was a big, tall, bald guy. He was probably the person that spent the most time with our operations. He was the number two.
Okay.
He was there for a long time, and when Morales left, he kind of, Pat, you know, held things together for that period of time.
Okay.